Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. It's Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:12 p.m. That is Eastern Summer Time. Well, I'm about to jump on a plane back to Los Angeles. We have been rather lucky in terms of missing the two big earthquakes over the last week, but I think they were sufficiently far away from Los Angeles not to have had any kind of real major impact. But one thing that I found interesting about being around Columbus is that the city is booming. That cities like Austin, Texas, or Nashville tend to be getting more headlines in terms of the media coverage about millennials moving out of the big cities and towards these lower cost areas. That is certainly the case in Columbus, and one I think hallmark of that is that the vast majority of the Ubers that we took to get around the city had cracked windshields because there is so much construction going on. There's a lot of gravel on the roads, and that is resulting in people's cars getting damaged. I thought there is also a boom in terms of housing. People do tout the fact that housing is cheaper than elsewhere, but living standards tend to be reasonable here, but then also wages are lower. So when we talk about people that are making perhaps 50,000 a year, but then they're paying 350,000 for a house, well, that's still seven times their income. That, I think, is something that does tend to be underreported. Well, then when we look at what's going on in the markets here, Deutsche Bank has pulled back violently in here today. That was following the announcement of 18,000 job cuts. Generally speaking, when a company announces that many job cuts, the stock generally, at least, tends to stabilize. The market, however, is voting that that's not nearly enough. And rather than cutting costs, what really needs to come to the fore is some sort of plan that Deutsche Bank is going to return to growth. The one problem that they have is, well, Deutsche tried to become a globally significant investment bank and failed. And that is part of the reason why the share continues to trend downwards. Perhaps more important than the fact that you had the downside Q reversal today is that it's encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean, and it's still in a reasonably consistent downtrend, particularly since the beginning of 2018. When we look at the wider European banking sector, then German banks have pretty much been excised from the index. The only two that are still listed are Deutsche and Commerzbank. What we actually have in terms of the European banks is a progression of higher reaction lows. Now, that's incrementally higher reaction lows. And of course, it is going to have to sustain a move above the trend mean in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. I suspect, though, what investors are looking at in terms of European banks is what the formulation of the next LTRO program is going to be. The last one was quite a bit smaller and more measly in terms of lending capacity than the previous. That has curtailed liquidity to the banking sector. There's a realistic possibility that the ECB is setting up for negative interest rates. So that's also likely to be a headwind for the banking sector. When those headwinds are sitting out there, then obviously investors are going to be looking for a growth strategy, and Deutsche Bank has disappointed. What I find interesting is that the Greek stock market has been among the best performers in Europe over this year so far. But it did pull back in here today, and that was evidence of a little bit of buy the rumor, sell the news. That was a downside Q reversal from the psychological 900-point level. There is a short-term overbought condition, so it does look like we're going to see some pause and consolidation. But it did rally rather impressively to get to these levels. This represents the level or the region of the peak from back in early 2018. It's natural to get some consolidation in the region of a previous peak, and there is ample scope for some consolidation, and it still remain within a broad recovery scenario. This is all part of a much wider base formation in development for Greece. The replacement of a very, or I guess perhaps the best way to think about it is a populist left-wing administration with a more business-friendly administration is a positive. I don't believe that that has quite been fully priced in yet, but we do look like we're going to get some consolidation. Then when we think about the Greek bond markets, well, yields have continued to compress, and the spread over German bunds is currently around 250 basis points. That has narrowed in really quite considerably. If anything, that is a testament to the fact that the last administration in Greece was able to push through some of the reforms that were demanded of it and was able to hold on to power. More than anything else, that was probably, well, they've been punished for acquiescing to the demands of external creditors. That was to be expected. That, in fact, is going to happen to just about any one of these populist administrations that makes bold claims and then doesn't follow through. That is something that the current Italian administration is going to have to deal with when it comes time for the next election. Now we've seen the revolt against the populist administration in Greece. That's unlikely to change anything. What it does suggest is that we're going to have a back and forth in terms of the capturing of political power right across some of these more indebted or economically stressed countries. Then, when we look at what's going on in Turkey, there were some very big headlines over the weekend about the fact that the central bank chief has been fired. But the impact for the lira was not nearly as deleterious as it could have been. If we go back and look at the history of this trading pair, well, we've had much more dynamic moves on much less in terms of the news flow. The reality is that when we think about the government bonds, well, it is, in fact, it is the when I'm trying to remember what the 10-year yield is for the Turkish bond markets. And I think the more important point is, rather than thinking about the stock market, if we simply look at one of the bonds, I think we'll get an idea of just what people are thinking, that it's unlikely that 7% is going to be breached. We've had a compression in yields over the course of the last couple of months, and it looks quite unlikely that the 7% level is going to be breached in terms of any kind of rally. The higher those yields go, the less likely it is that the central bank in Turkey is going to be able to cut rates to do anything, regardless of Erdogan's view that high rates cause inflation, which is a nonsense. The reality is it's very unlikely they're going to be able to cut rates meaningfully, particularly on a sustained basis, because of the impact that would have on yields. And that is, I think, the conclusion of investors. What I think was perhaps more noteworthy in here today was the fact that the A-share market was down over 2%. And that's the biggest downward dynamic we've seen since the beginning of May. And when we look at this market, it is right in the region of the trend mean. Now, it is important that this 3,000 level continue to hold. If it fails here, well, then that's going to open up the door to a retest of the 2,500 point level, but it would suggest that there is less appetite for supporting the stock market from the Chinese administration. The banking sector was leading on the downside in here today, and it is unwinding that very short-term overextension relative to the trend mean. But again, we're going to find out in the next day or two whether, in fact, this region here is going to represent support. There continues to be street protests and increasingly loud demands for universal suffrage in Hong Kong. Well, the Communist administration is going to do whatever they can to avoid that. But the H-share, excuse me, the Hang Seng was down 400 points in here today. Now the big question is, how much of the recent bounce can it hold? There is still a sequence of higher reaction lows. The most important point of potential support is the 27,000 level. If that can continue to hold, well, we still have sequences of higher reaction lows in a broad a bullish environment. But today's downward dynamics suggests that there is at least some profit taking underway. Now, when we think about what's going on in terms of Japan, well, the Nikkei was also down 200 points in here. Now, part of the reason that we've had some selling pressure in Asia was because of what went on in terms of Wall Street last week. With the strong jobs report on Friday, there was a little profit taking. But again, there's no evidence of downward dynamics on Wall Street. The breakout so far has held. The most important thing we've seen has been the upside Q reversal from the region of the trend mean approximately 5 weeks ago. That low would need to be countermanded in order to question that the potential for a breakout and additional upside from these levels. In the course of this bull market, we have seen a number of reasonably lengthy periods of consolidation. In fact, if we go back and think about how long they have lasted, they've all lasted about 18 months. Well, it's been 18 months since the peak put in at the beginning of 2018. So this is a reasonably consistent advance. There have been occasions when the index has sustained moves below the trend mean in the course of this medium term, or well, at least this almost decade-long bull market. And on each of those occasions, the moves below the trend mean have not been sustained, and we've seen meaningful rebounds reasonably shortly afterwards. Then we're now at a point where the range is being completed on the upside, and we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside as long as that breakout is sustained. This is now looking like a really quite easy chart to analyze, because we have some really very clear points that can give us, I think, touchstones in terms of the consistency of the trend. If we get a failed upside break, then that would have to happen in a very dynamic manner. There's been an absence of downward dynamics, so we'd have to get a very large downward dynamic to confirm supply dominance in the region of the upper side of the range. Then it's quite normal that we would see a pause around the 3,000 level, because it is such a big round psychological level. The most important thing to highlight would be if we start to see resistance coming in the region of the trend mean. The last time we had evidence of that was in December. Well, in fact, it was more like in November that we started to see resistance coming through in the region of the trend mean, and that resulted in a clear downward break. Well, that downward break was enough to spur central banks around the world to become much more attuned to recession risk and to the view that they've already raised rates too high. The fact that the ECB and the Bank of Japan didn't even get off the zero bound, that the UK is still very close to it, and the USA is at the top of its interest rate cycle, it might be galling for investors to tolerate or to accept that interest rates can't rise in this cycle. Eventually, that is going to cause a problem. There is a logical inconsistency in this market today, where you have $13 trillion of bonds that have negative yields. Someone is going to bear the losses from that. Not everybody can buy at negative yields and expect to make money from them. I think that is akin to the exact same rationale that we had with credit default swaps back in 2005 and 2006. Back then, it was the assumption that the invention of this new product would allow everybody to hedge their default risk. Well, what we found out in the credit crisis was that That assumption that everyone could hedge their default risk led to really, I think, un or really ill-advised risk-taking. Eventually, we found that not everybody can hedge their default risk. Somebody has to bear the default risk, and then we had a crash. Well, what we're seeing in the bond markets today is it's assumed that everybody can make money in with negative yields, that nobody is eventually going to tolerate the very clear potential for loss by holding things that have got a negative yield. Well, it's very simple to just look at these contradictions in the market and say that they're going to cause a problem later. The most important thing at this stage in the cycle is to be particularly, I think, alert to the consistency of trends. We're at the point in the cycle where you can get a bubble. That does look increasingly likely, especially from where valuations are today. Morgan Stanley has definitely taken the opinion that they want to be the bear in this cycle. They want to be the ones that are expressing caution because of the valuations. Well, that will probably put them in good stead to benefit when the market eventually does roll over, but they run the very clear risk of being wrong in the short term, because if we are going to get a bubble and the market is breaking on the upside and could potentially sustain this break, well, ranges are explosions waiting to happen, and there is the clear potential that we could go up significantly before we get the next significant pullback, or indeed a recession. And in fact, that is one of the lessons from the yield curve. It's when the yield curve becomes inverted, and I think it is certainly worth highlighting that the 2-10-year yield curve has not inverted, but it is contracting, and it is back now to 15.5 basis points. That's the lower side of the range. There has been a significant contraction so far this month, and we're only on the 8th of July. But the most important point is that once you get the inversion, usually that is when the stock market does well, that it is such a long lead indicator for trouble in the market that the market can do really quite well before it eventually does roll over. The one point that I think is worth highlighting is that historically defensive companies are doing better. That was certainly something that became very clear when I was reweighting the autonomies portfolio at the beginning of the month. The number of companies that are breaking on the upside from what are historically viewed as highly defensive sectors is really quite impressive. Then we have the fact that utilities have been viewed as bond proxies basically forever, and with yields contracting, they were also at new highs. I think it's worth highlighting as well, though, that breakouts have generally not been sustained in terms of the trend in utilities, and we have just seen a breakout, so there is potential for some consolidation. But I think in this cycle, we also have the addition of the subscription business model, and it is subscription business model companies that have generally been leading in this cycle. The fact that the business model adjustment that some major corporations have adopted, well, that has turned what was previously a highly cyclical business set into a much more modelable set of cash flows. It gives these kinds of relatively higher margin technology companies the predictability of highly defensives, and that is contributing to their continued outperformance and the fact that they have so far been immune to the largely range-bound environment on the wider market. It's also one of the reasons why Amazon has continued to be viewed as a buy-the-dips investment. If Amazon can break above 2000, then that's likely to be a green light for a lot of retail investors to get back into this market. And it's currently at 1947, and this continues to look like a reasonably bullish consolidation. Google has been, well, had been one of the most beautifully consistent trending markets, but it has lost consistency. And now it is right in the region of the trend mean. It has a unique set of obstacles in terms of the potential for antitrust. I think the big point about antitrust, though, is that subsequent to a breakup, the individual constituents taken as a whole generally tend to do better than they did when they were just one company. So I think that is something that is worth keeping in mind, even with this discussion of the potential for breakups or for antitrust suits, which do represent short-term obstacles, but potentially not really long-term obstacles. I think when we look at what's going on in terms of the bond markets, well, the 10-year Treasury yield had really accelerated downwards, and it continues to hold around this 2% level. The issue with coming up with a bearish view on bonds is we're really at the market has pretty much concluded we're at the top of the interest rate cycle. What we're starting to see is the pricing out of the potential that the first interest rate cut is going to be for 50 basis points. But it is likely we're going to get an interest rate cut. The one challenge that the bullish hypothesis, I think it's the most credible challenge to the bullish hypothesis for stock markets, is that it isn't usually until the Fed in fact does start to cut rates that you start to see the stock market taking fright. So if we get verbiage from the Federal Reserve that they are not so much cutting rates but unwinding the last hike they put in at the end of last year, that is likely to be greeted by investors reasonably well, that we're getting additional liquidity coming into the market, but that the Federal Reserve is not overly concerned about growth. If they were in fact to cut by 50 basis points, I think that then that would be cause for investors take fright or to get worried about the outlook for growth. Meanwhile, the US dollar remains really quite firm, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. It has bounced really quite emphatically from the region of the trend mean, so this continues to represent a broadly positive environment for the dollar. But the USA is slowly but surely removing supports from the dollar. The Federal Reserve's balance sheet, in fact, is continuing to contract. It's going to continue to contract until September. They've already told us that they're going to end this quantitative tightening in about 2 months. So, but until then, they're going to continue to contract the size of the balance sheet. So that represents a continued tailwind for the dollar. It's only a matter of time before investors start to become leery of being bullish of the dollar. But what I found quite interesting is that despite the fact that we've had a reasonably impressive rebound in the dollar, that gold remains really quite steady, that we are getting this consolidation around this $1,400 area. The hallmark of the range that persisted from approximately 2013 until now was that moves above $1,350 were not sustained. There is really quite a wide overextension relative to the trend mean, so there is a need for some consolidation. As long as that consolidation occurs, mostly are really above the $1,350 area, and most particularly above the trend mean, then this will represent a first step above the base. The first step above the base is when you start to get people arguing about whether it's a new bull market or whether this is a sell the rally opportunity, and that there is going to be the people that subscribe to the new bullish hypothesis, which in this case is the outlook for negative rates and massive monetary accommodation, versus the bearish argument, which is that gold, it does not represent a bullish environment, that there is no real reason to own it, or that it is a barbaric relic. The real hallmark of a new bull market hypothesis is when a breakout occurs, and then investors over the course of a few weeks or months are willing to continue to pay higher prices in order for the bull or for the breakout to be sustained. Well, that has so far occurred with gold. It does suggest that more investors are of the bullish view than the bearish view. And I think that represents rather an encouraging sign that we are in a bull market environment. Oil prices are steadying around the $60 area, but I continue to think that the distinct absence of surging oil prices is something that is reasonably positive for the wider market. We're in a more volatile period for oil prices, and the fact that the uptrend from the beginning of the year has been broken and that we are in a more choppy environment, I think that supports the view that we are in a secular bear market for energy, for oil prices, that the introduction of the massive new sources of supply has been a transformative factor in terms of the global energy sector. What I also thought was interesting here is that UK natural gas has at least found near-term support. We've had a massive decline, but the advent of really quite warm weather in much of Europe is perhaps going to be enough to overwhelm the supply dominance that we have. And we've had a, at least it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs evident over the last while. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.